Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome again, welcome again. You're with Reverend Harris, Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr., and Dr. Gene Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. We are happy to be broadcasting this evening with you once again. We are here on the West Coast here in Fresno, California, and we would like to give a shout out to all of the freedom fighters across the world and across the country, and to our ancestors who have been keeping a good fight and who have laid a legacy for us today to be able to continue to fight and continue to struggle that African-American people have been oppressed here in this country. Again, you're with Reverend Harris, Reverend Dr. Floyd E. Harris Jr., and Dr. Gene Kennedy out of Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors, the number one radio show in the world. We are excited again because we have Dr. Gene Kennedy with us today. She is on the board. She has called in early. Can you believe that? Dr. Kennedy has called in early today. So we know that she is fired up, ready to go, and ready to have a good conversation tonight. We would like to give our condolences to a brother named Cedric Hardiman. Cedric Hardiman, who was a brother, conscious brother that I know, who just passed away this past week. And his funeral services are going to be this Saturday out at Clovis East. Cedric Hardiman. And I would like to just give a moment of silence, if we could, just out of respect for the legacy of this brother who was an educator, a father, grandfather, and a good friend to many of us, who was a very conscious brother and who has helped to stabilize and to bring programs at Fresno City College, at Simba, and different programs. I'd like to just give just a moment of silence. We'd like to thank you for that moment of silence for the legacy of our good friend Cedric Hardiman, who will be laid to rest this Saturday, a brother who really loved Fresno and loved black people and all people, who was an educator. Nevertheless, we're going to go into our show today. You're with myself and Dr. Gene Kennedy, who is here in Fresno, California. She is in Fresno, California. Can you believe that? She has been away for a while. But she is back here in Fresno, California with us. I have not seen her yet. And while I'm just trying to get myself all geared up to see her, I mean, I don't know what she looked like. I ain't seen her in so many years, and she hasn't seen me. We may not even recognize each other when we finally come to in contact. But we're going to bring you a good show tonight. And Dr. Gene Kennedy, are you on the line with us this evening?
Well, I am on the line this evening, my brother, and I'm very pleased to be on the show this evening. Let me say straight up front, if you hear my phone not coming out the best, please let me know one way or the other, because I've been having some difficulties with my phone since I got back to California last couple of days, and so I am using a loaner. And so I've had some difficulties with it sounding very muffly. So I'm not sure what you need to do, Brother Harris. Text me or let me know, and I'll move its location. But again, I'm very, very pleased to be here tonight. And my, what sad information to hear. I did not hear about Brother Cedric Hardiman, and I just heard of it here on the show. So I'm going to make every effort that I can to try and possibly attend the funeral, if I can work some things out on this end of what I'm saying. But, we've got some soldiers that are passing on, and as they pass on, they leave their footprint in the sand, and I'm hoping that we can find someone to fill those footsteps. And so it surely lets us know the times in which we're living.
Yes, Dr. Kennedy, I know that you work very closely with Brother Cedric Hardiman at Fresno City College, and maybe in some different classrooms or what have you. I know both of you are educators, and so I know that it's pretty close to you working with our brother. But, you know, we hope that those will attend the services to show their respects to our brother and his life and his legacy. And that's what this is about. That's what the struggle is about. That's what all of our ancestors and the freedom marches, the freedom schools, the Black Panther Party, Stokely Carmichael, Shirley Chisholm, Fannie Lou Hamer, Mother Rosa Parks. The list just goes on and on and on. And I think that we have to sometime just stop and just recognize and learn and just really dissect their lives on all the work and the heavy lifting that they did while they were here. Megan Edwards, who was getting black folks, you know, not too long ago, Dr. Kennedy, black people didn't have the right to vote here in America. It was not long ago. And Megan Edwards in Mississippi was organizing and mobilizing the community and educating white America and our people on why it was important for black people to have to be treated equally here in America and to have the same privileges as our white brothers and sisters, especially our white brothers, who was very privileged and who made all the laws to benefit them. And so Megan Edwards was a young brother who was out there in the trenches working for the NAACP at that time, and he came home one night, and someone was hiding in the bushes with his three little girls on the other side of the door, and someone walked up behind him and blew his brains out. That's the legacy, Dr. Kennedy, that's the truth. I didn't make that up. You can go to the history books, and you can read where Megan Edwards was assassinated on his doorstep with his little girls on the other side of the door. I mean, we live in a country that decided that they wanted to blow up three or four little girls in a church. We live in a country, still living in a country today, that bombed Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The United States government bombed Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, a thriving African-American community that, just like your city right now, we had our own bus lines, our own grocery stores, our own railroad lines, our own taxi service, our own doctor offices, and it was all destroyed by racist white folk who was part conspiracy with the white government, the United States government. So, Dr. Kennedy, when you're an educator and you hear people say, well, you know, the first terrorist attack on American soil was 9/11. Because, see, that's why it's important for us to understand our history, because that type of teaching is going into the public school system to teach that 9/11 was the first terrorist attack on American soil. But the first terrorist attack was on black people in 1921. We've been over 30, black people been over, built over 30 cities and communities across the country, which was all burnt down by racist white folk in this country. And those cities and towns was not passed down to us, Dr. Kennedy, as the farms that the plantations that we, our ancestors, worked on across America was passed down to their children, 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 children. And so today, when you look at these farms and these farmers that are in businesses today, it came off the backs of black people and those oppressed people and indigenous people, Indian brothers and sisters here in America. Dr. Kennedy, from an organizational psychologist standpoint, what are your thoughts about what I just said?
Well, I have to say something to you. I want to correct you slightly, and I often don't do that, but I want to say that there was actually a first attack on the United States of America before the African slaves came here to America. In fact, the real first attack here in the United States of America was when those folks from Europe came over in the Mayfair ship and found what they did not know the name to be Indians, Native American Indians, but they came over and found a way to what they called finding America, locating this land and naming this land and stealing it from the Indians. And the way in which they stole it from the Indians is a brutal, bloody way to do that. These were people who were already in a ship that had been given a certain time to get out of Europe because they did not want to subject themselves to the government there. They did not want to subject themselves to the religious order there. They did not want to subject themselves to the class system and to just the overall things that was going on, law and order that was going on in Europe. And so many were told to leave, otherwise they would be beheaded. Many whose families did not want to know them took the opportunity to put them in the ship, to send them abroad, to leave England, to leave Europe. Many sought as a second chance to start over, to get away from a government that they did not want to subject themselves to. So many reasons. That ship was full of all kinds of people with all kinds of emotions, all kinds of emotions and feelings. And I want to bring in the behavioral piece of this as an organizational psychologist. And they came here with the taste of blood already in their mouths. They came here with a vengeance. They came here already to fight. And so no wonder when we look at of the pilgrims coming here, no wonder when we look and see their behaviors and even see how the Constitution was written and the underlying theme of the Constitution that was written, we have to go back in time and see what the attitude was, what the spirit was behind the letter for them to come. And when they came and saw these Native American Indians, they found ways to scalp them. They found ways to rape them. They found ways to take out their anger and their frustration on them. So what am I saying? America really was built on blood. America was really built on so much violence. America is really built on people who just had a vengeance in their heart. And it seems that they've always been attacking other people, others that don't look like them, others that look different. And so we wonder why it is when the second wave of folks came in with the African Americans or the Africans coming to slavery. And, of course, we've had other groups that have come in to America through different times. But when we look at the brutish behavior of how, again, they were able to institute slavery and make that an institution that was an income benefit, that earned money to build up this nation and its culture and to build up its economy, huge insurance policies that were taken out on the slaves and how they were abused and how they were made to be lesser than human beings that didn't even have the right to vote. And so we know history, we see that. And, of course, we come in now and we've had many other attacks that have happened in so many different ways within cities, within communities. And, of course, then we look at 9/11 and we see someone coming from outside of the country, which many are still convinced that that was organized and orchestrated. This is absolutely no way that a plane could come flying in your atmosphere and you don't see that plane from a distance. You have trained people to work on towers, trained people from the military, and they could not see the plane coming in to their atmosphere until it was too late. That's for another show. That's for another conversation. But there's been many, many attacks, and America herself has taken it upon herself to go out and attack. And so she lives consistently looking over her shoulder, wondering when someone is going to pay her back for the many times that she's gone abroad and have attacked government so that she could put her own government in place and so that she would be attacking others for control and for power and for the minerals and for the richness that they could get out of the country for an opportunity to control their government so that in the end they could get their policies put across. That is for another show. That's for another time. But when we look at the overall picture, it's a wonder that America cannot get the conversation going around race. It's a wonder that America does not know how to begin the conversation about race. Because, in fact, people think when you talk about race, it's only going to talk about the blacks. They have to go way back. When they start talking about the way slaves have been treated in the system, they got to go beyond that and start talking about and how they treated the Native American Indians. And so, again, they have so much to answer to. They have to talk about how they treated the Japanese who were interment here. There is so much abuse that comes out of this country, what human beings have done to another human being. One race has done to another race. And when you begin to put all that together and look at all of the oppressions that's taken place through race, through gender, through socioeconomic, we can go on through religion. And then today we have such a huge attack that comes about with the Muslim community and how America sees Muslims and who they name to be Muslim, because they can't make up their mind whether the president is a Muslim or not. They still come one day and say he is, another day they say he isn't. But neither here nor there, you can continuously see the underground, the undercurrent of how much hate is dripping in the veins of Americans. Now we have immigration issues, and we hear and listen to even those who are campaigning for a position to be president, and yet you hear how they accuse certain races of being racist because one or two or a handful of people that are racist. But look how many Americans themselves race. How many teachers cannot keep their hands off of their students, consistently being brought up under sexual charges? How many parents are so cruel to their children? And how many employers are so cruel to their employees, particularly when someone is hurt on a job, how they choose to sign the least insurance policy? And it does, they can no way compensate a person's loss of physical health, because they've hurt themselves on their job. And so they find a way to get around. Not only do they pay their workers cheap, but they also don't want to invest in them even when they are hurt. And we can go on and on and on. Policies that are written, policies that keep some people, benefit some people at the expense of others. And so we listen to so many of these so-called leaders who are wanting to become the president of the United States of America. And we listen very keenly as to how are they planning to take care of their people. How are they planning to make America safe? How are they planning to increase an opportunity that we can have a better life through our earning power? And how do we take our role in our society again and in the world so that we have policies that benefit everybody and not oppress others? And so there is definitely, some things that America is known for, Americans are known for. And we find the best way we can to learn to live together, the best way we can to survive here together. It doesn't make you a hater because you point out these things about America, by no means. But it is one of a conversation that needs to take place. And I don't know when that conversation will fully take place. We have it in segments. That are having these conversations. But what do we really expect? What is going to be the role of America moving forward? She's worried about China. She's worried about Russia. She's worried about other countries, the policies that they think that people are going to work together with them, and then they find out that they're actually not going to be in solidarity with them. They have trained many of their own military forces. They pay to maintain their own military sources, and yet they turn right around and use those same skills back on America. So there's a lot. There is a lot that is going on today. And but we live in a world that is, and we live in a world that we wish it could be. So let me stop there for a moment, and let's continue with our thought processes this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy, and that's why education is good, that we may stand to be corrected, and there's nothing wrong with being corrected, because we want to make sure that we get correct information out across the country here. I want to try to chime into a conversation that we had talked about a while back in regards to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, you know, here on the West Coast, we know King did come to Fresno and he marched to Rockefeller Stadium. We have pictures of him here in Fresno. And King has pretty much, I would believe, been in every major city across America. I don't know if he went to every city, but I know he was in the major cities across America. And one of the things, Dr. Kennedy, here in Fresno, it seems that the politicians have overtaken Dr. King. It's become political. You have politicians show up grandstanding, running for office. You have the police departments here now, which blocks the streets off and what have you, and picture taken and all of that. And I'm wondering, have we really lost the real message of Dr. King here in Fresno, California? Because I know you had mentioned to me that that in the South, that Dr. King holiday, his birthday, is not really celebrated and on the same platform or the same. It's acknowledged, but it's not really celebrated like we do it here in Fresno with a whole week long of different events, what have you. Can you kind of, since you've been there in Atlanta, Georgia, where Dr. King originated from, his headquarters where he lived, can you kind of educate us on your perspective of what you see the West Coast and the South in Atlanta? Is there a difference? Should we not be doing what we're doing here in Fresno, for as the marching and blah, 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 blah? Or should we just be more conservative, like those in Atlanta, Georgia, just to acknowledge Dr. King? But maybe there's other things that they're doing, maybe not all the, you know, the bells and whistles that we do here. Can you kind of take us down that road for a little bit, Dr. King?
Well, again, as a new person exploring all of my options outside of Fresno, California, taking kind of what I have called a two-year sabbatical out of California, out of Fresno. I left my teaching assignment here to explore what all of my options would be. And one of the things I wanted to do was to start off and look at the South and see kind of what it has to offer, what its culture is like, and to be able to, you know, look at areas that have been impacted through history. And so that is one of the reasons, by the way, I have not taken out my residency outside of California. I still call California my home. I still pay my taxes here. I still have my mailing address, in fact, that comes here. I still have family. I still have real estate, so forth here. So this is still home at the end of the day. But I decided to go on my own, what I would call Mecca. We know that Malcolm X went on a Mecca to try and find himself, as well as find out what was going on, find out what his message is. And so I'm kind of taking my own journey. And so starting off and looking at a place like Georgia and seeing how the lifestyle is, and certainly the lifestyle is very different there. It's interesting because the first time that I was there and waited to see the bells and whistles be done for the celebration of a Brother King, I was rather surprised, because I think that we do quite a big to-do here in Fresno. And again, I'm using Fresno, having been in Fresno for almost 40 years. It you know, comparing it to anywhere else is really, really a challenge. But I was surprised to see how little fanfare was done around his celebration, around his legacy, around him as a person. As a matter of fact, they say so much about their family that their family today, they talk about the King's family, the dispute that they're having. Just recently, Carter, former President Carter, had to do mediation between the brothers and the sister in regards to the dad's property and legacy. And that felt like it was just someone that you knew down the street and around the corner. To those of us who live outside of the area, we would be trying to figure out, what exactly does that look like to do mediation with the King's family? Are they talking about the same family? And so I found that when they would even do celebrations, it was not a big fanfare, as we do in many, many other cities. And someone said to me after asking and inquiring why that was, they said, well, you know, this was something that was established many years ago. The king wanted to be able to go out of Georgia and do his civil rights movement. But when he came home, he wanted home to be a place that was quiet, a place where he didn't have to look over his shoulders, a place where he wouldn't have to be also marching and advocating. And it seems like Georgia accommodated that mindset. And so when he came home, there was not a whole lot of marching and advocating that was done in his area, mainly, again, for the reasons of allowing him to have a little bit of time, a little bit of downtime, a little bit of rest time coming home. And I don't know if that is what has set the trend. We see schools, yes, they do things, and various groups will do things. But as a whole, I mean, I expected a great big carnival. I expected a great big, you know, something huge, unbelievable, that would happen. And they celebrate, but again, I think I was expecting something to be much huger in the celebration of the king's celebration. He's just another man. He's just another person. As a matter of fact, let me say this and then give you back the mic. I've even heard of people saying, Reverend Harris, that they don't think that king did them justice. And, of course, I'm shocked when I hear that, and I have to ask, why would you say that? Many of them thought that he did not advocate a policy that has benefited to them today. They don't feel that the integration was the way that he should have gone at it. Some feel that he was coerced into talking about integration, because had we not integrated today, that could be much further along than we are right now. And I don't know. That certainly is an opportunity for a conversation to take place in that. But that is a very common awareness, a common understanding of that. Let me say, just days before I came here to Fresno, that King's sister had an attack as she was coming out of her own gated senior citizen living apartment. As she was just getting ready to get in her car, some hoodlum came up and punched her in the face. And, you know, that was on the local news. And, you know, it was just another day in the neighborhood. Nobody made a big to-do about it. It made the news, but it wasn't like, wow. And she happens to be the sister of King, and Martin Luther King was this, and Martin Luther King was that. It was just another family. It wasn't a big deal. The news media and people around did not make a big to-do. And in the same breath, there's even conversations going on right now because of Stone Mountain. They were advocating to remove the Confederate flag and even certain images of people that is in the mountain who they felt have allegiance to the Confederacy culture or flag. And they've been talking about people in the communities, and various groups have been talking about taking down some of those faces that you see in Stone Mountain. And in the same breath, people are asking to take down Martin Luther King's face from up that mountainside. And there's conversation about putting up another monument of King there. And the conversations are, some are saying no, he ought not to have anything to do with Stone Mountain, even if he said it in his speech. And then others are saying, well, we think that they should have him there, and others, because it shows that we have grown and we have come a long way and that we can all live together, because this is what King would have. So it's a very mixed feeling about King. I think the legacy that Dr. Martin Luther King has actually left us, more than anything else, is his speeches. The articulation of his speeches, the messages behind his speeches, that seems to be the legacy. That seems to be what has gone on long before. The speeches tend to be what is upheld or admired or discussed more so than the man Martin Luther King himself. And I find that very interesting, to say the least, coming from the West Coast, and how we celebrate him in huge ways, and bigger than life. It's quite different there, right in his home city, his home state, and the areas in which he was raised and bred.
There you go, Dr. Jean Kennedy. Dr. Jean Kennedy, real talk with the number one doctor, giving her perspective on Dr. Martin Luther King from the Atlanta perspective and also from the West Coast. Dr. Kennedy, I want to, we haven't really had much time to talk about the minister, Louis Farrakhan. We have about 10 minutes left, and I do want to bring on some folks like Lady J, who went to the Million Man March, and also Brother Kainde went, and Bereji went to hear Minister Farrakhan speak to the nation about justice or else. You know, Dr. Kennedy, BET was founded as a black TV station at one point in time. And I believe that, once again, when we build something, we build an institution, we do not pass it along back to keep it within our community. If BET was sold to, I believe, don't know the name of the owners or owners, but I believe it was sold to someone of white descendant. There's conversations right now that people are very upset because, you know, the mainstream media did not support what Minister Farrakhan was doing at the Capitol, Washington, D.C. And people are now questioning BET, how come they did not cover the Minister Farrakhan from that perspective. And it's just interesting that the comments that I'm looking on Facebook is saying that